Welcome to Bubbles and Books, a podcast about two of the best things in life, books and champagne. Brought to you by Amanda and Ellen, co-owners of your local independent bookstore, Dog Ear Books in Amazon.
First, give me a cheers.
Cheers. And books are sexy.
Welcome to Bubbles and Books. Rachel did her job this week. We have bubbles, but
what's up, Rachel?
It has, what is that called?
It's a bottle cap.
It's a bottle cap. See, I don't even have the verbiage.
She's holding it with scissors. This is going to be a workman's comp situation.
Oh, I know. She's going to slice her hand open.
Get a different bottle. What the fuck?
This was, well, that was cold.
She prioritizes our cold drinking preferences.
What? I bet they have a can opener next door. Hold on. Or a bottle.
Anyway, this is a great wine. It says that... Yeah, she got it.
My husband would use his wedding ring.
If I had my spoon ring on, I would have opened it that way.
This is called Sunny with a Chance of Flowers with zero added sugar, and it is low calorie, and it has a gorgeous embossed label. So this is kind of like fancy. If this was a book cover, I'd be like, good job.
I hope it's good because this is one of the bottles that Ellen and I, oh, I did cut myself.
Jesus Christ!
Blood!
No, I was going to say, these are one of the bottles that Ellen and I got when we didn't have time to go to Cyclone.
Where'd you get it? Target?
No.
Hy-Vee. You could have sponsored this podcast with your embossed label, but you missed the opportunity.
And our next podcast, we are going to be featuring a more local wine.
Yeah, so look forward to that. You can hear all about it.
Yes.
Next week. But for today, let's find out where this came from. It's definitely American made. It's from Lodi, California, and it's a carbonated... Lodi, says Rachel.
It's a region. I know it is.
I know.
People who live there.
It's how I can't say one of my favorite author's names, Gramazio. Anyway, it is a carbonated rosé. Okay. So they don't even call themselves a sparkling.
We don't
but
really drink any wine that's not carbonated.
Yeah.
That's sort of the thing.
It is our thing. It's our brand here. So cheers. Let's see how this... Let's see what this bouquet is. See, it's on brand. Sunny with a Chance of Flowers. Bouquet. You got it. That's so witty.
I hear what you're plucking with chicken. Yours. Good.
Yeah, it's good. Good job, guys.
It's not too yeasty.
No, it's not. It's very drinkable. This would be something that you could have at like a gathering at your house and people would drink a lot of it.
For sure. Rachel, invite us to your house and serve us this.
No.
Okay, fine. I'll invite Amanda to my house and we'll drink it.
I'm just saying, this is a good one you can keep in stock. I mean, I assume it was a good value. I mean,
probably.
It didn't have a cork in it, so. Save money there with the bottle cap. Ellen, what are you reading right now? I've kind of had like an inferiority complex in the beginning of this year, because I feel like you're kicking my ass in reading, especially now that you're an audiobook listener as well.
Well, I've been cranking through them, but there are a couple things in addition to audiobooks. One, I only have one TV show I'm watching right now.
Wow.
Which is Survivor. Okay, but you know, it's going to go down when other of my shows come on air.
Okay.
And also, I've been reading a lot of like mystery thrillers, which go pretty fast for me.
Okay.
I've kind of just been in the mood for something that's sort of like easy and fast.
Okay, right.
I haven't been reading a whole lot of like
heavy,
heavy or dense.
You took some heavy ones at the beginning of the year, though.
I did.
Like, I'm thinking of Prophet Song.
Yes.
And Absolution.
But I would say like the last month or so, I've been pretty.
Okay. I'm just saying my ego is like a little tender.
Don't feel sad.
I feel like I'm not leveling up.
You're so level.
So what are you reading?
Well, I'm reading two books right now.
Of course.
I'm reading one, I'm listening to the other. I'm reading Listen for the Lie by Amy Tintero, which is a mystery thriller. I've been big on mystery thrillers lately. I've been needing like, you know, something that's like fast and easy. And it's a true crime podcasty type of book. So the name of the podcast is Listen for the Lie, and it's this hugely popular podcast, and it's the second season, and it centers around the murder of Savannah Harper, who was murdered 5 years ago. She was found bloody in the woods with a head wound, and her best friend, Lucy, was found several hours later walking along a road covered in Savannah's blood and claims to not be able to remember anything about the events, and she has long been suspected of the murder, but no one's ever been able to prove it. And so it's 5 years later, and this is the case that the podcast is centered on. Lucy is the protagonist of this book. So she's been living, the book takes place in Texas. As soon as this murder happened, she got divorced and she moved to LA, and she's been living there writing romance novels under a pen name ever since.
Oh, good for her.
Everyone in her hometown basically thinks that she's guilty of murder. She cannot remember. She really can't remember what happened that night. She doesn't think she murdered Savannah because she loved Savannah, but she doesn't remember. And she has no explanation for why, you know, she had Savannah's blood on her clothes. Lucy's skin was found under Savannah's fingernails. There was bruising. You know, like, there was a lot of evidence to suggest. I'm kind of
surprised that she wasn't convicted.
Nope, never charged, but everyone thinks she did it. Okay. So anyway, she's coming back to this Texas town because her grandma's turning 80 and she's very close with her grandma. And her grandma's like, you got to come back to town. Well, her grandma's really trying to get her to do this podcast because her grandma believes she's innocent and her grandma trusts this podcaster guy. She thinks that he's going to be able to actually solve this case. And if Lucy will agree to work with him, he'll be able to clear her name.
That's really cool.
So she comes to town thinking she's there for her grandma's birthday, but the podcaster guy is in town. And so she reluctantly agrees to sort of be interviewed by him. And he tells her straight up. He's like, I don't know if he did it or not. You know, I'm going to prove it either way. So that's the story. It's like what happened. You've listened
to a fair number of your own true crime podcasts. How do you think it measures up?
I think it's good. Of the true crime podcast type mystery books that I've read, it's the best one.
Awesome. That'll be really handy for our customers. Yeah.
And Lucy's a great narrator. She's very sarcastic and witty. And one of the reasons people don't like her and are suspicious of her is because her whole life she's kind of a take no shit kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you're a woman and you're a take no shit kind of person,
people don't really like you.
Yeah, you're not as well liked. And so, maybe she's being misjudged.
Right. What else are you reading?
I am listening to Unlikely Animals, which is a favorite of our bookseller, Katie's. It's been out for a little while. And it's a lovely, charming little book. It's about this girl, Emma Starling. She's in her early 20s. She's from this little town in New Hampshire. And when she was born, she was said to have this healing gift. Like this power to heal. And
strange.
As she grew up, her parents were like, you know, everyone leave her alone. Like, she'll come into her abilities or not on her own. Like, but she could heal like minor things, you know, like rashes and scratches.
Strange. And
things like that.
So magical realism a bit.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. And so she left home, moved away, told her family she was going to medical school. She got into medical school, but she decided not to go. And she doesn't really know why. And she's been depressed. And anyway, her dad has been diagnosed with a degenerative brain disease. And her family has asked her to come home and maybe like try to help heal him. Also just be there.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, it is a lot of pressure. So she goes home and she has to figure out how to tell her family that she's not living this life that she said she was living.
For years, apparently.
Yeah. And she also has lost whatever ability she had. She feels like whatever ability she had to heal people is gone. And she's not able to help her father. She has a complicated relationship with her father. He's kind of a fuck up. She's got a younger brother who's addicted to opioids. When she comes home, she finds out that her best friend from high school, who she had a falling out with several years before, has been missing. Nobody's really looking for her. She was a drug addict. People assume she ran away or she OD'd or something. And so she's back in her hometown. She's like kind of dealing with all this shit. Meanwhile, part of her dad's condition is that he is he's hallucinating, maybe. there was a historical figure in their town who was like a conservationist type of guy.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of animal friends. And their family lives on this, like, near this park that all these animals were at or whatever. And so her dad is always, like, thinks he sees this guy who was, like, from the 1800s and they're friends.
That's so cool.
And her dad is also, like, seeing animals everywhere. And so he was a distinguished professor at a college and was asked to resign because he was seeing animals in the classroom.
Slipping.
Yeah. So she's back in her town dealing with that. But the other interesting aspect of this story is that the book is narrated by the ghosts in the town cemetery.
That's super cool.
Like the dead souls.
I love
who
it.
Who watch over the town, and they don't meddle. They're not allowed to meddle, or their souls will poof, disappear.
Really?
But they have a love for the townspeople. They're invested in their lives, and they're like rooting for all of them.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, it's a charming book.
Despite all the tragedy
of drugs. Despite all the heaviness of the book, it is quite charming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
I like it so far.
That sounds great.
What are you reading right now?
I'm reading books.
What kinds of books are you reading?
I decided to read Smut.
Smut? Tell me about it. Open door, closed door.
All the way open. There are no doors.
I listened to Done and Dusted.
Is it any good?
It's exactly what you'd expect.
Sex on the Wild Frontier.
Heck yeah.
I mean, like, is it dusty?
There's no dust sex, if that's what you're talking
about. Are there chap wearing people with no underwear?
No.
Oh, well, then it's not what I expected.
What have you been reading?
Okay, I'll
it's
tell you.
So good.
I'm going to listen to the second one.
Oh, it got you hooked. Okay, my reading is definitely not related to Done and Dusted. I read and briefly listened to a portion of, so it was like a combo book.
Ooh.
It was a fun experience. So I got to hear the voice, okay. And then I got to read the rest of the book of I Cheerfully Refuse, which on a previous episode I said I was going to read, but then you told me to read How to Solve Your Own Murder, which I went off on that tangent, but then I came back to it because Leave It. Inger is someone I read probably in high school, Peace Like a River. I mentioned my mom handed me the book, said you should read this. You know, she was always giving me her hand-me-down books. I was enticed by the title of I Cheerfully Refuse.
It's a great title. And the cover itself is a really cool cover.
It's a really beautiful. But I didn't know how I was going to feel about it because it is a slightly distant future. There are a lot of those books right now. We're sensing the demise of society and our government and America as we know it. And there are many books being written about a slightly future America in which we fucked everything up. And that's the case here. We have a story about a man named Rainier, like named after Rainier, Mount Rainier. But he goes by Rainy. And he found his great match in life, you know, kind of late in his 20s, maybe early 30s. Her name is Lark. He overheard her talking to patrons at the library while he was eating his lunch during, work days as a construction guy. And he was transfixed by the joy that he heard in her voice and her love for humanity and her love of books. And so he decided he was going to become a reader to snag her. The book is not so much about their early days. It's more mentioned in passing. We know that Lark and Rainier live, I think, in Michigan. They live in a small town. She runs a bookstore. Books are kind of antiques now. They can only be found in like estate sales. Some people have no appreciation for books. We have our first illiterate president, which I think is a total dig at like Trump.
What do you mean? He is a smart man.
I know. He's a genius. The smartest man there ever was. The best businessman there was ever.
Literally the greatest ever.
Yeah. He's so not so illiterate. Great. Yeah. It's so great. But I do think it was a funny dig at it. And that there are these people who feel like if you haven't read, then you're untainted by the liberal agenda. And if you hear a noise in the background, we're experiencing a lovely stormy Iowa day. This is a day for curling up and reading or visiting a bookstore.
Yeah, so it's 11:20 a.m. According to weather.com, the severe storms are supposed to move in at 1. So we, this is not, this is the beginning of the show, ladies.
But back to the book I'm reading. I love Lark and Rainey. They have this life in this small Michigan town, and you get hints of the ways in which society have broken down. You know, education systems really aren't in place anymore. Traditional job avenues really aren't options anymore. Cell phones maybe exist, maybe don't exist. But what I love about it is you get this like little slice of what life is like in which people still love each other, still pursue a living, still go out on Friday nights with friends, play some music, have hobbies, celebrate birthdays, even though everything we feared about the demise of society has occurred. I mean, we will keep living.
Right.
We will still seek joy and love and the arts of humanity. But where the book takes off is Lark and Rainey will, they're kind of like on an underground railroad of sorts. They house escapees who have been part of obligatory work programs and also medical research,
okay,
unwillingly. And when people escape, they're often in horrible condition. And they're called, they refer to the French word for skeletons because people would escape to the Canadian border and would be in the French region. And these skeletons would look like skeletons. So they are housing someone who has left mysterious circumstances. You know, he's been involved in some way with medical research, work programs, and he's very fearful and he's seeking escape. And okay, so this gentleman has been living with him. He's young. He looks like a skeleton. You know, he's been very worked very hard. And he brings with him an advanced reader copy of the one book never published by Lark's favorite author of all time.
Ooh.
And so it's like the great feat of her life that this guy arrives with, I cheerfully refuse, the advanced reader copy of the book she always sought in all of her years collecting books. And so she's just received this gift. But things fall apart pretty quickly. The person that this escapee fears comes in pursuit of him, maybe because he has things. Is it the book or is it other, okay, other materials that, you know, he's escaped with? And Lark dies in the process of this evil man's pursuit of the escapee. And then we're left with Rainey, who is distraught and lost and doesn't know how he will live. And he ends up getting on a sailboat and heading out into Lake Michigan for a destination in which he and Lark previously visited as young lovers. And he hopes that in some way he will find her out there, that maybe she isn't truly dead, because they thought they saw the author of I Cheerfully Refuse, who had been 2 decades passed away when they first visited these islands, the Slates. But in his pursuit of these islands, he encounters some of the nefarious characters. He's thrown off course. He's pursued because maybe he has in his possession what's been sought all along by these kind of evil, you know, powerful people. So,
sounds really good.
It is very good. What I loved about it is what I mentioned about what does life look like when society has fallen apart in its everyday goings about, you know, how do neighbors engage with one another? How do you love your spouse? How do you spend your time? Do you still have hobbies? So it was very, beautiful ode to seeking out joy and love despite circumstances. And it's also, you know, a look at our future. Will it be what we fear? Okay. So that was really amazing. I also finished with my daughters the other night, The Lost Library, which was written by Rebecca Steed and Wendy Mass. It still is a best-selling great chapter book. It has some illustrations, but it is about a community in which a library burned down 20 years ago under mysterious circumstances. And all these years, they've been without a library. And people have wondered, you know, was it the young man, the intern, the librarian intern in the basement? Now that man is grown. He has a young son who discovers his dad might have been involved in the library. fire. There are mice, there are cats, there are ghosts. There's a former assistant librarian. Each of the chapters is told from a different perspective. It's a great semi-mystery community story and also about love of books and libraries. So that was a great read aloud. And I'm looking for my next read. So,
well, you could always do Done and Dusted.
Yeah, Done and Dusted. So that's what I'm reading.
Sounds fab.
This week, we're doing kind of like a roundup of what's been happening. Yeah, what have we been talking about?
It's been a couple weeks since we did a podcast. There's just been a lot of different things going on.
The first thing that we need to talk about is March Madness.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that was super fun. We loved watching people vote. A lot of people participated.
We're talking about our specific March Fiction Madness.
Yeah, of course.
As opposed to the real March Madness, which was also fun.
Which we both followed very closely.
The state of Iowa did well.
Yeah. It was really hard to see the men knocked out, but, you know, they had a great season. They have a lot of potential for next season, the Iowa State men.
Yes.
The Iowa women.
Yep.
We rooted hard for them all the way to the end. Caitlin Clark, what a fun, like, this is great storytelling in sports.
Yes, loved it.
Did you see her clip from Saturday Night Live?
No, I've seen the headlines. I've not watched it.
She did a great job. Got Michael Che pretty good. And I saw her fabulous outfit that she wore to the WNBA draft. I wish Elizabeth Holmes, one of my favorite fashion commentators who talks about the Royals all the time. If you don't follow her, she's E. Holmes on Instagram. I wish she would have done like she does what she calls so many thoughts on Caitlin Clark's outfit. Cause I was like, I want to know what bracelet she's wearing. Is that a sparkly bandeau top under her oversized white cream jacket with a skirt? What are her shoes? Are they tennis shoes? Or are they heels?
Well, E. Holmes, we're looking at you.
Yeah, E. Holmes, come on. So many thoughts are athletes. Holmes,
I think of Theranos. I'm like, that's not
I know.
That's not the right.
Different Elizabeth Holmes. This is the good one.
Not the right Elizabeth Holmes to look up to.
So we had March Fiction Madness on our social media. Thank you for everyone who participated because it was thrilling to see who survived week to week.
Yeah, it was really fun. And we had a lot of engagement on it. And it was fun because we had it up in our stories and you could vote on the different brackets and you could see the like how the votes were stacking up. So you could like, you know, mine is like a little bit behind or whatever.
Right. And it encouraged you to go back and vote again. I was so happy. Like I felt like American Mermaid got like the same ride that the Iowa State men's Cyclones. Like yeah. They made.
She did she, good.
She made it.
Julia, you beat Claire.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really happy with how far they went. But I also wasn't really surprised by where we ended up in the end. We had the Heaven and Earth grocery store versus Fourth Wing.
Yeah.
I mean, were you surprised? I mean, does that make sense to you?
I'm not surprised. I think you have one that is like a really fabulous piece of literature.
That a lot of people enjoyed.
Probably going to win some awards, you know. And then you've got this, The Fourth Wing, which has been hugely popular, reignited a love of reading for a lot of people, and also sort of jump-started this genre that is enormous in popularity right now, which we're calling romantasy.
Right.
Which has been around for a while, but I think Fourth Wing is really what
put it in the spotlight.
Yep, exactly.
And reinvented, I mean,
the sprayed edges.
The sprayed edges.
All of the hype. So I'm not surprised that those two ended up being the final two.
Rachel, the voting in the end was really close. You watched it. You screenshot it. What were the final percentages about? Because I was really rooting for Heaven and Earth. A lot of people at the store really loved it. That's not to say they didn't also love. So 47% of people voted for the Heaven and Earth grocery store, 53% Fourth Wing. It was really close. And, you know, it kind of mirrored how things ended up in March Madness basketball. Like, you know, it was UConn versus Purdue. And UConn was the anticipated heavy hitter. And then in the women's bracket, we had the undefeated team from South Carolina versus Iowa. Again, two that you expected to get to the end. There was a lot of, you know, hype behind both teams. But, you know, who you expected to win won. Everyone expected South Carolina to win and they won. And so Fourth Wing has just had this fandom, this yep. huge readership. And I'm happy for how many people it brought to reading. Do you know what I mean? Like Same. How many people who got sucked in who now want to read the next one and the next one and the next one. So yep. congratulations, Coach Rebecca Yaros. You're deserving Great of job. Your win.
Great job.
And I'm sure James McBride is happy to have made it to the big
and
dance.
You know, she's got, you know, another book coming out. So will she make...
Will she make the 2024? Will she repeat back to back?
I don't know.
In our March Fiction Madness? Who knows?
Who knows? We'll see.
We'll see. 2025. Participate. Okay, Ellen, you traveled recently, just briefly. Road tripped. Tell everyone what you were up to.
I went and saw the total eclipse.
I love that for you.
Yeah. So we're not that far from the path. And in 2017, there was another total solar eclipse. And my husband and my daughter went. They went to like Oklahoma or I don't remember, somewhere. They went to the Path of Totality and they watched the eclipse.
Yeah.
And they thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And so he really wanted to take her again this year. And then he was like, oh, I should take the boys too. There's not going to be another one for like 20 years. And I was like, well, then I'm going to go because I've never seen a total solar eclipse before. So we just decided to pull the kids out of school and we drove to St. Louis on Sunday. Stayed the night, and then we just, like, got on some back roads and got ourselves into the center of the path on Monday, and we found this Baptist church out in the country.
That's so cool!
And it was, like, so there was no one else around, and they had a yard, and so we just plopped ourselves in the yard of this Baptist church, and we watched a total eclipse, and it was really neat because when it goes into totality, you can take your eclipse glasses off. And so it's just like...
Really?
Yeah.
The corona didn't burn your eyeballs?
No. You can take them off. And I haven't seen any pictures that really do it justice. It's so weird. And when you're sitting there, like in, you know, the minutes leading up to totality, the sky, you know, it gradually gets darker and darker and darker and the temperature drops
right.
significantly. But when it goes into totality, it's like a sunset, but it's 360 degrees.
Weird.
So it's like twilight, you know, sunset colors. And being out in the country, we could see the 360 degrees of wow. the sunset. So it was,
and,
like, it was really cool.
You know, it's the Midwest, so it's flat.
Oh, it was flat as fuck. It was really, really neat. And my kids, you know, they spent a lot of time in the car and they were like, they thought it was totally worth it.
Oh.
So it was a good family memory. We had a good time. It was really neat. We agreed that in 20 years, we will all watch the next one together.
You have inspired me to make a 20-year plan to participate because I did not do it in 2017.
And I think next time, I don't remember where the path is. It's going to be a bit of a farther
drive.
But, you know, I don't know that any of my kids will still be in Iowa at that point. So,
yeah, my kids, it was funny, back at home, plenty of people had gotten glasses to see what they could see. And I did see the sky darken.
Yep.
And, you know, I wasn't into it. But, like, plenty of my kids' friends' parents were, like, taking them out of school. And I got calls from multiple yeah. of my children were like, can I leave school with such and such a person's mom? And I'm like, God, I suck. I'm not a cool parent. I did not plan for this.
I mean, I've seen partial eclipses before and they are really cool. And I remember being like, I think in like fifth or sixth grade, there was one. I remember like going out at recess and like we had the glasses and stuff.
Right.
And we watched it. But there's something really like eerie and fucking sweet about when you have the glasses on, you can't see anything unless you're looking at the sun.
Okay.
You just see the eclipse. But if I had them on right now, I was looking at you, it would just be black. Like,
wow. It's very effective.
Right. But when you're watching the eclipse, when it's a partial eclipse and the moon is gradually moving over, right? It's just sliver, sliver, sliver. And as soon as it goes into totality, it's just like black.
Wow.
And so you take the glasses off and it's like.
That's so crazy.
Really. And my son, Atticus, who's like, he was probably like the least excited of my kids to be there. So we're all we're watching it get, you know, the sliver of the sun get smaller and smaller and smaller. And as soon as it went to totality, he rips his glasses off and he goes, oh my God.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So really how many hours did you drive?
So to St. Louis was about 6 hours. And then we spent probably 3 or 4 hours in the car getting into the path on Monday. So St. Louis was only about an hour from the path, but traffic was crazy. We actually got off the interstate and took back roads, but it was still pretty backed up. And then we spent another, I don't know, 5 hours in the car.
Oh my God.
On Monday, stopped in Hannibal, Missouri, overnight, yeah, hometown of Mark Twain. We stayed at the Super 8, guys, so it was very fancy. And then we drove back about 4.5 hours the next day. So we spent a lot of time in the car for about an hour of sitting outside for the eclipse.
I think it's pretty impressive.
But we did go by the American Gothic House on the way home. I saw the signs, and I was like, oh my God, we're going to go by the American Gothic House. And my husband was like being grumpy. He's like, I don't want to stop. And I'm like, if we go by that house, we're fucking stopping.
Yeah.
Like, you do not drive by the American Gothic House and Same. Not stop.
When I went to St. Louis to visit my friend who sometimes listens to this podcast, hey, Sarah, we met her at the St. Louis Zoo, yeah, and it was on the path. You have to stop.
You have to. It's like, I had never been by it before. I was like, why would you not do that?
It's on, so Iowans, it's on the route to St. Louis.
Yeah.
So
and if you drive to or from. It's a very pretty drive. It's a right. kind of a back way of getting there. And so, yeah, we stopped there and the kids were really excited because during COVID, we went through this phase where we were recreating famous paintings. The kids
really?
Would dress up as, yeah, we did one of American Gothic where the kids took a poster board and they made the house behind them and they dressed up.
You can tell you're a former teacher, Ellen.
We were just trying to keep busy. But anyway, so we got there and I was like, guys, it was Dad's idea to come here. Isn't this so exciting? But you know what? He posed for all the pictures.
And he was a very convincing.
He was a good sport. And then I said, can I put this picture on Facebook as my profile picture? The one of me and him as American Gothic. Yeah. And he said, that's fine.
It's so really cute.
Ended up being a good sport.
Should we put that in the show notes?
Sure.
Okay. That'll be in the show notes. You got to see it. It's really cute. It was very convincing.
So yeah, it was a fun trip. And it just made me think, oh, I should do more stuff like that with my kids. Just more fly by the seat of our pants.
I do not do that. I cannot do that. Oh my God. I plan like our family vacation a year ahead of time. And like, I'm a little squirmy right now because I don't know exactly what we're going to do every day for our family vacation at the end of July. Like, I'm a little uncomfortable. I feel like I've been neglecting my duties.
I think I booked our hotel room for the eclipse like the week, just for the Sunday night, the week before.
I am very impressed by you.
We're just going to go. We're just going to see what happens.
I mean, this like driving back roads in general, like see where we get. Couldn't do that. Yeah. I'd be like so anxious the whole time. What if we're not where we need to be?
Well, I was watching the map the whole time. I knew once we got in the path, we were good. And then it was just a matter of trying to get as to the center as possible, because the closer to the center you are, the longer the totality lasts.
The more worth it your experience
is. Yeah. So we had about 4 minutes of totality where we were.
I'm so awed by you, and I will try to follow in your footsteps in 20 years.
Okay, I'll meet you there.
Yeah, see ya. All right. So we've had a fun spring at Dog-Eared Books.
Yeah, we're kind of ramping into that. We have had a little bit of a break in some of our author events, just, you know.
The winter season is busy. First of all, November and December are wild times in small business. It's just helping people find the books that they are shopping for all their loved ones. It is a very busy time in the store. So we generally don't host events during that time. And then January and February, as you know, if you're from the Midwest, is like hibernation recovery time.
Yep.
It's not worth being in the world around that time. You should get really into puzzles during that time. Puzzles and books should see you through January and February.
Yeah. So we are kind of, we now have Mariah, who is planning our Cocktails and Conversations events. And so we kind of kicked off this season recently. So we had on April 4th, we had Tracy Garvis Graves, A Trail of Lost Hearts.
Yeah.
Came, and that was a really fun conversation. She's written a number of books and she resides in central Iowa.
Yeah.
And she's lovely.
Yeah. She's so great. She signed the rest of her stock. So if you wanted a signed copy and don't have one yet, we can ship it to you. Get a hold of it. It's cross between fiction and romance.
Yeah.
She has one of those books that can easily live in either section, but romance definitely happens in the woods. Geocaching plays a role.
It's a geocache kind of romance. And it was, the conversation was moderated by Julie Stone, who's one of our, you know, favorite local authors.
She is a huge, yeah, she is a huge cheerleader for all of her local Iowa authors. And she stays so busy. We love her so much. She's a huge supporter of the store.
And then a week later, on the 11th, we hosted Heather Gudenkopf. This is the second time that we've had Heather, but it's been a few years. She has a new book called Everyone is Watching. I've read it. It's really fun.
You talked about it on the show, but to remind people, what's the Iowa connection?
So Heather Gudenkopf, I mean, she lives in Iowa. She lives in Cedar Rapids, but she's lived many places in Iowa. All her books take place in Iowa, except for this one. But there is a character who is from Iowa. And the premise is that there's this new reality show called One Lucky Winner. The prize is $10 million. And it's a series of like sort of high intensity competitions and challenges. And there's only like five people who are invited to come play this game. And one of them is this mom from Iowa. She's a single mom. She has a chronically ill daughter. And she's like, yeah, I'm gonna go try to win $10 million. So they go to this like sort of crumbling estate on a vineyard in California, and they're playing this game. And it's super popular because it can come, it doesn't have a scheduled time that it airs. It can literally come on any time, day or night.
So semi-unrealistic, I feel like, but
right,
keeps people on the network, right?
And it becomes apparent pretty early on that like the people who have been asked there, even though they don't seem to have a connection to one another, they seem to have all been asked there for maybe reasons that are deeper than just competing on a reality television show.
Ooh, suspenseful, curious, mysterious.
Yeah.
So people really enjoyed that. That was a sold-out event.
It was a sold-out event. People were really excited to be there. We had a great cocktail. Heather was awesome. Good conversation about reality TV and money and writing mysteries. And I would hope to have her back again next time she writes a book.
She's amazing.
And we have some upcoming ones that we're excited about.
Right. So the next one that we have, just a brief mention, is during 515 week. Mm-hmm. And I'm so curious about this book. It's called Secret Iowa. And it is written by Megan Bannister.
So that will be May 16th.
Okay, May 16th. So just off of May 15th, which is a celebration of the 515 district. Yep. It's a full week-long celebration in downtown Ames in which we celebrate everything that makes the 515 area code really special, our local makers, creators, our businesses, our culture. And we're trying to have as much local emphasis as possible during that week at the store. And so we will have this author event, a cocktail and conversation with the author of Secret Iowa, Megan Bannister. She counters the idea that Iowa's flyover country. Like, what's in this state? We've already mentioned your road trip.
American Gothic.
So Frank Lloyd Wright country in eastern Iowa is really beautiful. I love that I don't know the answer to this, but I've seen it. How much the world's largest popcorn ball weighs. I have a selfie with the world's largest popcorn ball. It's on the way to Okoboji when we picked up my daughter's dog, Posey, the Cavalier King Charles. We needed a pit stop for the puppy to pee, and there was the world's largest popcorn ball.
You have to.
So it would be a perfect guide to road tripping Iowa, things that you don't know about your own state.
And it's like weird stuff, too. I think like the caption of it is like the weird and obscure or something. So it's not necessarily stuff in Iowa that you would know, you know, like general tourism stuff. It's like weird stuff too. I'm excited to have her. I think it's going to be really fun.
And I appreciate someone who loves to dive into like absurdity and obscurity.
Yep.
That's my kind of stuff. And then next up in the fiction world of cocktails and conversation, a beloved author of the store, Chloe Angel, who is from Iowa City area, writes romance. Her first book, Pas de Don't, was a store favorite. We hosted her. She was delightful, so generous, and writes a really good romance. I read Pas de Don't.
Yeah.
It's set in Sydney, Australia. A woman who has left the New York Ballet because of issues of misogyny and abuse finds her new home and an opportunity to recover and regain her confidence in the Sydney Opera House where the ballet performs there, falls in love with an injured author. The next book is called point of pride. I love her puns. They're so smart. We'll be hosting her on Thursday, June 20th. This book comes out at the end of May, and it is going to be a really popular event. I think romance is just exciting.
Like, yeah, and romance readers are a lot of fun.
Right. And so this one is kind of within the world of the first book, but is not necessarily a sequel. You don't have to have read the first. I'm sure you'll enjoy it that much more if you read Pas de Deux. But Point of Pride features Carly Montgomery, who's just arrived in Sydney, and she is a maid of honor in a wedding. And she steps off the plane and runs into an adversary, Nick Jacobs, the most uptight, inconveniently attractive man she's ever met.
Hate when that happens.
He's also in town for the wedding.
Okay.
So weddings, forced proximity, enemies to lovers, Sydney, Australia, written by a local Iowan. Amazing.
Okay.
And then for me personally.
I'm excited for this one too.
Are you excited for me?
Yeah, but
I know you're also excited.
This is also my doppelganger.
Oh my God, it was so great. Okay, so quick story. We were in, Cincinnati. We were in Ohio. I was going to say Indiana. I can't remember. Eastern.
We were somewhere.
We were in the Midwest at Winter Institute. You were wearing this awesome, like, orangey red jacket. Got it from Old Navy. We could put it in the show notes if you want, like, a statement-making outfit. Cool, like, black pants and shirt underneath. Your gorgeous raven hair was done up for dinner. And someone came up to you and said, Claire? Because they thought you were Claire Lombardo, author of one of my favorite books, The Most Fun We Ever Had. Claire was at Winter Institute promoting her new book, Same As It Ever Was, which is out in the end of June. She is an Iowa City author, originally from the Chicago suburbs, and you were mistaken for her.
Yes.
Which is a major compliment because you guys are both beautiful.
Yeah, I will take it. I am glad that she's my doppelganger.
Right, and you should start passing yourself off as her and be like, yes, I am a renowned.
I'm sure Claire would appreciate that.
So Claire is in news lately because she was a Reese's Book Club pick.
Yeah, she just got picked for Reese's Book Club.
Reese has been picking, alternating hardcover, new releases, and also paperback backlist. And she picked The Most Fun We Ever Had as her pick for this month, April. So tons of people all over the country are discovering her. I'm so excited. I mean, she was a New York Times bestseller in her own right. It was almost picked up for a mini series, the book was, but pandemic.
Yep. And it would make a fabulous
movie. It would. Yeah. It totally would.
But yeah, so she'll be with us on July 11th.
It is July 11th, which is just after our mutual birthday week.
Mutual birthday week.
Yes. And I'm so excited. Like, this is just like, I'm just, oh my gosh, so excited about this. Her book comes out at the end of June. I've already read it. It is amazing and powerful. I feel like Claire is this like secret magician, okay? Like, she's younger than us and, you know, doesn't have four kids biting at her ankles all the time, but she has this amazing ability to write about the breadth of human emotion and relationships far beyond her own experiences with such authenticity and accuracy that really moves you. And I just feel like she's a magician. Like, she body hops to experience other people's life paths and experiences and then is able to jump back into her Claire Lombardo body and write about it, yeah, like, and with perfect accuracy.
You know, we both feel that she's like one to watch because she's a little bit of a, you know, I think we both have likened her to Ann Patchett a little bit. Like, she's someone who's going to be putting out great novels, you know. It's just a while, you know, people just need to catch on. They're starting to.
Right.
But
and we feel really special because we've known since before we opened the store that she was an exceptional.
We're basically triplets with Claire.
Yeah. We have invented this very intimate relationship. But you know what? She's a dog lover. She loves her dog so much. Renee is totally in this book by another name.
And she does humor us. Maybe she doesn't really like us, but she does humor us when we're around her.
Right. We feel like
I was in the airport security line with Amy. Amanda got to go through because she has like the
TSA pre-check.
Yeah.
Global entry.
And so, and Claire was in line behind us, but you know, you do the wraparound thing. So we kept passing her. And like, you were like, again. You were like already at the bar and we were going to meet you there. And I was like, Claire, you want to meet us at the bar?
Thank you.
And she was like, yes. So
we had crappy airport
food together. We had crappy together. Airport cocktails and food with Claire. So that basically we're reunited for life.
You know what I also love? As part of her social media promotion for her Reese's Book Club pick, like she did a behind the scenes in the life of Claire Lombardo. And she, in her workspace where she writes, she has this like killer orange wall. It's like reddish orange, like my favorite color. Mm. Her dog made four of the photos. She works at Prairie Light, so she had a photo of her going to her shift as a bookseller. But I saw her wall of notes, what she's working on. Like, I just love like knowing that her next book is in production. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's happening. It's already living and breathing. It's life. It's way into the world. And that makes me so excited because I can't wait to read what's next. I've already read what's coming this summer. I need the next one.
Get on it, Claire.
So that's what's happening in the world of author events at Dog Ear Books. Things to look forward to. Buy your tickets now because we want to... I think these are going to be great parties. They're going to be amazing.
Yep. And we have more in the works. So just stay tuned because we've got other exciting things coming up with authors. All right. And then lastly, in our roundup, Bailey, our bookseller, recently updated our classics section.
And a few things that she added to the section, like it doubled in size. Our customers really love buying classics. They love discovering maybe something besides Pride and Prejudice, but they also love the most beautiful edition of Pride and Prejudice. Right. So Bailey has expanded the number of titles we include in our classics section, but also expanded our collections of classics. So we've had this really cool, like almost metallic, floral or beautifully ornate designed collection called Chiltern. And Chiltern editions, like I said, they have kind of this metallic, shiny cover. They're slightly small format. They have a silk bookmark that runs through them. They looked amazing together on the shelf. We've always sold that very well. But two collections that you could check out for yourself in store or online through us would be the Penguin Clothbound Classics, which all have like a bold color plus a really pretty design in a contrasting pattern. And then the Penguin Vitae collection. They have really interesting designs. They display really well horizontally. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but like the cover reads horizontally, like turn it on its side and it makes for a really cool display. A few of our best-selling would be Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silko and with a foreword by Tommy Orange. Love it. So like our great working authors today are writing intros to these really cool editions.
And the other thing that she's done in addition to bringing in like these other collections is she's really tried to diversify that section. Like, you know, the problem with classics is the things that have been typically deemed, you know, that term classic are very white, very Western. And you know, the truth is there's classic literature from all over the world. There's classic literature from all different voices and from all different time periods. It's not all like 1800 shit. So she's done a really good job of bringing in, some additional classics to really diversify the section the way that it should be.
Right. For instance, one of the set of books that made the jump, and I'm not saying this is necessarily diversifying in a particular way, but the Tolkien series made the jump into classics. Barbara Kingsolver, some of her earlier works made the jump into classics. These are books that have kind of proven in the contemporary era that they're being held up as great literary works. So it's fun to kind of see.
Julia Alvarez made it in there.
Yeah.
You know, like there's
and she's still writing. Yeah. You know, we just had a new release from her this month.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So check out the section, discover a new classic. Okay.
Did you get a sandwich?
Yeah, I did. Ellen, tell me what's popping in the store this week. There's a big title.
So the biggest book coming out this week is Knife by Salman Rushdie. This is a memoir and it's around his stabbing. So he was stabbed during an event that he was giving on August 12th, 2022. So not very long ago. And it left him blind in one eye, partial use of his hands. And fighting for his life. I mean, he's still recovering from this attack. And it was sort of the result of, in 1988, he wrote this novel called Satanic Verses. And it was deemed by many across the world to be blasphemous. And it provoked all kinds of riots and book burnings and things like that. And ultimately led to the supreme ruler of Iran calling for a fatwa on him for his death and anyone who was involved with the publishing of that book. And so for years, Salman Rushdie has sort of had this hanging over him. He's never apologized for Satanic Verses. He's gone about his life. And he describes in this book that when he sees this person rushing toward him, he's like, oh, this is it. Now it's happening.
Wow.
You know,
all these years, all these years later,
oh, here it is. Like, so there was a part of him that sort of always sort of like knew that it might happen. So it's a memoir of his recovery, but it's also about many of the reviews that I read called this a love story. So he fell in love with another writer. Rachel Eliza Griffiths is her name. She's a poet and novelist, and she's like 30 years younger than he is. And he was not looking for a relationship, never thought he would really be in one. And they fell in love and eventually got married like the year before this happened. And she's been instrumental in his recovery. So it's about sort of like love and being by somebody's side through something as horrific as this.
Wow.
But also about just art, forgiveness, pain. He never names his attacker in the book. But there is, I guess, this, and he writes about how he's decided never to reach out to this person. He doesn't want to have contact with the person who attacked him. But he also wants to try to understand maybe why this person did what they did.
Right.
And so a part of the book is an imagined conversation with his attacker.
Which I would imagine is very therapeutic.
Yeah. So anyway, I kind of want to read this one. And yeah, it's out this week.
Yeah, awesome. New release in paperback, worthy of note, would be Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club, written by one of my favorite authors, J. Ryan Stradall. He's originally from Minnesota. He writes about the Midwest. I discovered him through Kitchens of the Great Midwest. So I discovered him early on through Kitchens of the Great Midwest, which takes place partially in Iowa. What he does really well is multi-generational Midwestern family stories that very much reflect the relationships we all know and the environments we know and the culture we know so well. In this case, he writes about supper clubs and three generations of a family that has maintained a supper club. And what is a supper club? A supper club would be a place you go, and it's not exactly an all-you-can-eat buffet, but there's like an offering of what the supper club has for dinner each night. Usually comes with a dessert, oftentimes a grasshopper, starts with a really good brandy old-fashioned. So it's about this culture of the Midwest and kind of the generations that created that culture.
So it's been a while since it came out a year ago. And we both read it about the time it came out. It's a lovely book, but it's in this, it gets passed down through this family. And like, it's really about the women in the family. And for some of them, it's like a real hindrance. It's like, I don't want this.
It's not my identity.
I don't want to be saddled with this like family responsibility. And for others, it's like they're saving grace, you know? But he writes with such love of the Midwest. And if you're a Midwesterner and you're like, oh, God, I'm a Midwesterner. And then you read his books, you're like, oh, I'm a Midwesterner.
I know.
And he's so lovely. Like, he's we got really to meet him last year. He's like just the sweetest, most humble, down-to-earth person. And when he talks about writing about the Midwest, his love for the Midwest is just so apparent.
I can't wait to see what he'll do next. Frankly, that's, you know, that's the way I feel about him. I'll read anything he's written. Book one involved hatch peppers. Book two involved beer. Book three, brandy old fashions.
Shit.
I don't know what's next, but what's it's next, all good.
Jay Ryan?
Yeah. We'll look forward to that. So with that, keep the champagne flowing and the books going. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode. And for more Dog-Eared Books hijinks, follow us on Instagram @DogEaredBooksAmes or on TikTok @DogEaredBooks.